Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Happy Black Daughter podcast with Allison Bram. I'm so excited. So excited for this episode. This is episode 10. And the reason why I'm so excited is because I just had a belly full of laughter before beginning this recording here of the podcast, because my next guest is wonderful, hilarious, and full of laughter and energy. So I can't wait for you all to listen to her, to hear her personality, and to hear what she has to offer in the world. All right. Because as I've stated before on this podcast, I like to share information about individuals who are doing great things, not just for themselves, but for others. Because I believe when we show up in the world, we don't just show up selfishly to serve ourselves, and serving others looks different for different people. And I can't wait for my next guest to share with you all how she's serving others. Okay. She is an amazing, dynamic, very determined individual who considers other people's feelings first. Very sensitive to other people's feelings. She is an advocate. She is the CEO of an amazing organization that caters to the needs of women and the building up of women who are broken from within. And she is a philanthropist. She is the author of her own world. And I am excited, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you a phenomenal leader in her own right, Miss Aretha Taylor. Aretha, welcome to the Happy Black Daughter podcast.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. Yay. What a great introduction. Oh my gosh. I'm like, is she speaking about me? Oh.
You same one. You same one.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It's such a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. How are you feeling today?
I am feeling fantabulous.
Oh, now wait a minute. You said fantabulous?
Fantabulous.
That is, you know, they should put that word in the dictionary.
Yes, they should.
I mean, after all, it just sounds so much better than fabulous.
Oh, you
know, it has that extra oomph to it, you know.
Yes.
And when one is feeling fantabulous, it's just to the next level from fabulous.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm glad you're feeling fantabulous. And so am I, because I'm speaking with you and I'm so excited to just get to speak with you, because I know we've known each other now. I think the very first time I met you was in 2010. Mm-hmm. I was enrolled in a certificate program in Brooklyn. Anyone who knows me, I'm always a forever long learner, and I enrolled in a short-term program in Brooklyn for community outreach. And I met someone, a colleague there, who did the same thing. And she knew, I feel so bad I forgot her name, but she knew of you, and she invited me one day. She said, hey, you know, there's an event happening in Brooklyn, and I think it was Bedford-Stuyvesant, or you could correct me. And
wow. You know,
it's a women's empowerment event, and it was in the basement. And I'm writing you now. I know.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think it was 2010. Maybe 2011, but
I think it's 11. That's when I started it.
Oh, okay. So 2011. And I attended, and it was just fabulous. Your presentation about what you were up to at that time, which we're going to talk about a little bit, was just wonderful. And it piqued my interest. And it was just some great, great food for the soul and really great things that you were doing then. And I know you're continuing to do. So tell me a little bit about Aretha Taylor. Who is Aretha Taylor? I know I did an intro, but who are you truly? Coming from you, from your own mouth.
Who is, you know, sometimes it's hard answering this question because I'm a woman of so many, you know. But I am a woman, first of all, of faith. I am a woman who loves. I am a woman who always want to see others progress, who want to see the best for others. And I see the greatness in people. I see what they do not see for themselves. I am a person who always wants to make a difference, even if it's just one life. And I am someone who is, as you said earlier, very sensitive to others. I am an emotional person, emotionally intelligent. So I connect with you on an emotional level.
Yes.
And I always try to listen to someone's heart.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And when you decided that when were you aware? Because, mm-hmm. you know, we have different stages in our life, mm-hmm. where we see ourselves differently. I know at the age of 20, I who I am now is not who I was at 20 years old.
No.
And mm-hmm. When did you realize that you were sensitive to other person's needs? When do you realize that you were that person? At what stage did you recognize who you are? I mean, we're always becoming, mm-hmm. and always grown, but when was that moment when you realize, this is Aretha Taylor, this is who I am? You know, what influenced that? What did you experience to really figure it out? Because a lot of us don't know who we are, mm-hmm. don't know what we represent. Mm-hmm. You know, was there a moment for you?
I would say I was in my early 30s, maybe 32 or 33. When I hit my 30s, I started to see things differently, myself differently. I came into a place where I fell in love with me. And I knew that I wanted a change within myself. And so I started going to church, right? And in going to church, the pastor, it was an outreach church in Long Island, New York. And she would take us on the street to have us hand out pamphlets. And this particular area, this was an area where people were living in poverty and they were addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Yes.
And a lot of homelessness in that area. And as we were handing out pamphlets and speaking to individuals, that's when it hit me. Because I remember being homeless. And I knew what it felt like being homeless and what it felt like being in that position where you felt unworthy. You felt that no one wanted to be around you, that no one loved you, that you were not accepted, that you were looked over, right? That you would just pass, people would just pass you by. I was not a homeless person living on the street.
Right.
But I was homeless as far as not having a place to stay, always bouncing from here, there, there. So meeting these people on the street, ministering to them, humbled me.
Wow. Wow. Let's back up a little bit. Uh-huh. I'm going to interject slightly. Mm-hmm. Now let's back up because this is huge. This mm-hmm. is huge. You said you were homeless and you yes. weren't homeless living on the street, but you mm-hmm. were bouncing from, you know,
yeah.
home to home and maybe friends or however you were
bouncing. Couch surfing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let's go back to where, you know, get a testimony in terms of what led you to be homeless. Are you able to share yeah. that a little bit? You know, what brought you to homelessness?
I got pregnant when I was 15. I had my daughter when I was 16. My mom didn't want me home. She didn't want me in the house. My mother was very abusive, verbally, emotionally, physically abusive. And prior to me getting pregnant, she would be accusing me of having sex. She would come home at nights because she worked at night. She would come home at nights and call me all sorts of names. You bitch, you whore, you slut. And she would beat me, punch me, slap me because I was being accused by my stepdad. And even my brothers would try to defend me, but she wasn't having it. So in her accusing me of having sex, my mentality at the time was, you know what? I'm going to have sex. You accusing me of that I'm doing it and beating me every day, that I'm going to do it.
Had sex,
bam, got pregnant.
Oh, wow. You rebelled.
So, exactly. So she did not want me there. She did not want my daughter there. And I felt very abandoned by my daughter's father and by the church. I didn't have any support. I felt that I felt like my life was over. And so the abuse continued by my mom. And I could not focus on my daughter.
Was the abuse more verbal?
Verbal, yes.
It was okay.
Yes, yes. She would say, you see, you lie and you say you wasn't having sex and see the proof there, you don't have sex.
and if the listeners are wondering what kind of accent is that, that's a Jamaican accent
there. Honey, yes. I am Jamaican born.
So in the Jamaican household, let me tell you, it's so interesting because for the most part, from our generation, was very strict. You know, it was like, look,
extremely strict.
I remember a couple of times. I mean, growing up, if a boy called my house trying to speak with me, it was an issue.
Yes.
My father would be listening on the other, on the other line. You know, a quick 5-minute phone call. You know, very strict upbringing. And but in your case, it was a verbal abuse. And when that was happening, how did you really respond? So you responded by you rebelled.
Right. And it was constant negativity,
mm-hmm.
constant name calling, constant putting down, constant saying you're nothing, you will be nothing, you're going to always be nothing.
Wow.
And so I felt at some point at that time, I felt like I was nothing because she made me feel that way. The church made me feel that way because I used to sing on the church choir. And when the pastor found out that I was pregnant, we had a nice little meeting, my mom, the pastor, myself, and his wife. And he's like, well, you can no longer sing on the choir. You know that, right? So, okay, so now what? So they sat me down as to kind of like punishment, right?
Right.
To make an example of me. And there was no support, no encouragement, no checking on me, no sending little care packages. So I got tired of the verbal abuse at this point. And I left at 16. And for 4 years, I bounced all over the place.
When you left at 16, where did you go? Like, was it friends? Was it at another family member's home?
I went to one of my friends.
Okay.
Her mom was like, sure, you can stay as long as you need to. And I stayed for maybe a year and a half there. And then I moved on somewhere else.
Wow.
But this went on for 4 years of trying to figure out how to feed my daughter, how I'm going to feed her myself, clothe her. So at this point, I had to drop out of high school, right? Because I didn't have any babysitters. I didn't have any income. I didn't have any support financially. I couldn't get public assistance no matter how hard I tried.
You needed to have an address. You needed to have
a guardian, and people didn't want to give information out. So So how was I going to take care of us, meaning me and my daughter?
Right.
So I remember working at a department store in Kings Plaza in Brooklyn, Joyce Leslie's department store. And at the time, it was $3.75 an hour. And you had to be 18 to start working there. And I lied about my age for them to hire me.
Oh.
And I worked there for a couple of years. And then I moved on to something else, taking care of the elderly, doing what I could, whatever I needed to do to survive and to look after my daughter.
That's it. You had to, your daughter and yourself, your daughter was the most important thing.
Correct.
To take care of, and mm-hmm. by any means you had to survive, and
mm-hmm.
in some ways you correct me if I'm wrong, I mean the choices were slim, so you had really no choice. And
right,
looking back, when you reflect on that now, how do you feel about doing what you had mm-hmm. to do? What was that process? How do you feel about that? Because I strongly believe that the struggle that we face in the past,
mm-hmm.
The things that we had to go through, it prepares us for
mm-hmm.
our destiny, our purpose. Mm-hmm. It helps us mm-hmm. to guide us into what we want or who we want to become.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, so self-reflecting on those processes, that's up. How do you think that helped to bring you to where you are now?
With the people that I meet.
Okay. Wow.
I was being prepared for that, right? The people that I counsel, the people that I serve in the communities, people that I speak with, people that I pray with, I can relate to them.
Yeah.
I can relate to their struggle, to their pain, to their hurt, to their disappointments. I can relate. And at the time, my mom was very much involved in the church, right? She was Pentecostal, so I was raised Pentecostal. And my daughter's father, who lived directly across the street from me, he was 2 years older than I was.
Right.
And so he was not supportive either. He wasn't helping me. And I was hurt by him.
Mm.
I felt betrayed by him. I felt abandoned, rejected, neglected, not only by him, by my mom, and by the church.
Now,
and
was he, so he, when you said, you know, you felt disappointed, neglected by, he mm-hmm. was there, but not there. Like, was he financially helping with supporting
no,
you? He just wasn't.
No, he wasn't there. He denied her.
Yeah.
He had denied her out of his own pride and anger, or he denied her in the beginning. And so that's why I felt betrayed, because he and I were friends first before yeah. anything else. We were friends. We hung out. He hung out at my house with my brothers. I hung out across the street with him and his family. Like, their spot was a hangout spot, right? So we were cool. We were good friends. But he started liking me from when I was 12 years old, and he pursued me from when I was three years.
You were both young.
We were both very young.
Right.
Very young. I guess fear. It was fearful for him.
Yeah.
And
was he working? And was it a case where also, you know, there was a time maybe he was working and just still was not owning up to his responsibility?
No, honey. Oh. He was working in the streets, you see. He was a drug dealer. He became a drug dealer. Oh. Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yes. So he was doing his hustling or whatever, you know.
Gotcha.
So see, Aretha was also a kind of person, I don't like drama. Never liked the drama then, never don't like the drama now. So if you say this is not your child, I want nothing to do with this, Yeti, I'm going to walk away. I'm not going to pressure you. I'm going to leave you alone.
You had the confidence to move regardless. You weren't going to put up with BS.
If you want to call it confidence, right? I think what it was, because it was pride on my part as well. And because I, like, if you're going to say this is not your child when you know it is, right? I'm not going to force you. I'm going to let you do this by yourself and on your own. I'm not going to force you. And I had a mentality like, okay, we're going to be all right regardless.
Right.
So I did what I needed to do for us to survive. For like maybe 2 years, right? I partied. Because I didn't know what hanging out was like, was having friends, was like, was going out, would be like, none of that. Because I didn't experience any of that. Because my mom was strict. We couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't do anything. We couldn't have fun, period. So when I left my mom's house and I'm out there with friends, sleeping here, sleeping there, sleeping everywhere with, different couches or whatever, and whoever would take me in. Aretha was still partying too for 2 years, right? And until I was like maybe 18, then I was like, I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. This is not me. I'm getting nothing out of this. And so by the time I was 20, I had to start thinking differently.
Yes.
And I had to turn my life around. Mothers, as a mom, we make a lot of sacrifices for our children. And one of my sacrifices, or one of the things that I went through that impacted me, was during that time, the family that I was staying with, I overstayed. And I remember the mother saying, you have to leave now. It's been, I think it was like, what, maybe 2 years now?
Now this is, right? Let me back up a little bit. Now this is the second, this is the second family home?
The second family home, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you stayed with them. You stayed with them for how many years?
I think two. Okay. At that time was 2 years, right? And she's like, you got to leave. I can't take this anymore. I can't do this anymore, because she had children too, but they were also older teenagers, right? And they were working, going to school or whatever, but she was like, all right, you have to leave. So I'm packing up my little things and I'm leaving that night, and I'm taking my daughter with me. She's like, no, do not take her out this house this time of night. You leave her. You're not taking her out, but you have to leave.
Oh,
right.
Whoa.
So I was like, okay. So I left my daughter, and I remember walking out on her porch, standing on her porch, and thinking, where am I going to go?
And you left your daughter too. I was like, I'm not going anywhere without my daughter.
I left her.
But yeah.
I said, where am I going to go?
Right.
What am I going to do? She says, when you get someplace and settle, come and get her. You're not taking her out with you this time of night.
Okay.
So I went across the street to a supposedly friend's house, a male friend. He knew my situation. He knew my condition. I remember knocking on the door. And he opened the door, and he was like, hey, Aretha, what's up? And I told him what just went down with the family across the street, with what the mom told me. And I was like, I have no place to go. I don't know where to go. I said, can I sleep here for the night? He's like, yeah, sure. But you know what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that, I was so taken back, because why would you say this to me? Why would you expect that from me when you know my situation? And I remember with tears flowing down, girl, I walked in the house and I said, okay.
Oh.
And we did the do.
Right.
And after we did the do, he slandered me.
Bastard.
Slandered me. It broke me.
Sure.
Terribly. Because now it got back to the family.
Mm.
And now they were judging me. And now they were talking about me. Now they were criticizing me. Now I was a slut. I was a hoe. You know what I mean? And so now the block, that's what they labeled me at. I was so shame. So now there's more shame on top of that.
Whatever else
I was going through, there was more shame. And it was shortly after that I had to get my life together. I got a wake up call.
Mm.
I was staying with my brother for a little while, he and his wife.
Now, hold on, stick a pin in that real quickly. Now, after that happened, you talked about, okay, you were judged and you were shamed three times over because of, you know, what you had experienced. Did you move in after that, or no? Like, when that happened, did you move in with him and your daughter there? Did you move in?
Move in with, no. With, okay. With the guy? Absolutely not. It was only for one night.
Oh, okay. No. Okay.
No.
Okay.
I remember just at that time searching, like, what do I do? The next morning I woke up, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went back to the family because the family is across the street. And I went and I told them, look, I didn't get a place. Can I sleep here for the night? And her heart was tender. She said, yes, you can stay.
Okay.
And then stayed another night and two nights. And da-da. Then, right? So, all right. Don't know where to go. You got to go to a shelter. You got to go to a shelter, Aretha. Mm. So... her daughter is taking me to a shelter, the Covenant House in Manhattan.
I heard of the Covenant House before, yes.
Get to the Covenant House. She drops me off, drops off my daughter. It's crowded in there. It's chaotic in there. I've never gone to a shelter before. They take my information. So now I'm waiting on a bed. I'm being processed, right? Girl, let me tell you something about God. So I'm sitting there and I start to pray that I don't want to be here. I shouldn't be here because I heard nothing but bad news about the Covenant House at that time. Mm. So you're talking in the 80s, right? Because my daughter was born in 85.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard nothing but bad news about that place. So I started praying and asking God to do something. All of a sudden, I look up and I see the woman's son coming in through the front door, looking around, scanning the room, looking for me. So I look and I'm saying, isn't that so-and-so? What's he doing here? So I call him and I tell him to come on over. I said, come here. So he waves at me. He runs over to me. I said, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? And he was like, I'm so glad I found you. I said, what happened? He's like, mommy was watching the news. And this shelter was on the news that it was one of the worst shelters in New York City.
Wow.
So she calls me and she goes, where did you guys drop off Aretha? And we told her. And she says, no, go get her. I said, are you serious? He's like, yeah, let's go. Takes me back to their house and I'm still there. I'm going. I'm still looking for a place, trying to figure out life, trying to figure out what I'm going to do. Don't want to go back home still because of the abuse that was there. Yeah. Not only the physical or the verbal abuse, but the sexual abuse, because my stepdad used to rape me at night.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on now. What?
Yeah.
So you're not only experience the verbal from your mom.
Right. And the physical.
And the physical abuse.
Mental and emotional. Mm-hmm.
But now your stepfather.
Yeah.
Sexually abused you.
Yes. 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 And he did that for a while. Yes. Yes.
Now that's a whole different part. We can dedicate a podcast. That's a whole
another story. Yes. Yes. Yes.
If you're just joining the podcast right now in this section here, we may have to revisit that and discuss that, you know, because I really want to focus on the strong leader and the determined woman that Aretha Taylor is. And I am so glad, I'm so elated just to have the opportunity for her to share her story. Because, you know, Aretha, I feel, I'm sure you've told your story 10 times over, but it's your story.
This is your first time hearing
this. This is my first time hearing it. And my listeners will be probably the first time hearing it as well. And you never know who you may inspire. You know, there might be a 15, 14-year-old, you know, young girl out there in Brooklyn going through, you know, similar situations like you did. So I feel that I want you to tell exactly what you've experienced, which you are, and focus on the leader. And then, you know what? And share that part. Yes, for sure. But we're going to dedicate another podcast specifically to talk about, you know, fathers and daughter relationships and, you know, and include that, because that is major. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry you went through that. Really mm-hmm. sorry you went through that. But, you know, please continue. Please continue. Mm-hmm. Please continue. You did not want to go back home because of that. No. Yeah.
Yes, that had a lot to do with it, too. At this time, he had left. My stepdad had left, but just the feeling and the memory of it all being there. And even when it happened and it went down, and I couldn't hold that secret any longer. And I wound up telling my sisters, and they told her, and she put him out for what, maybe 2 weeks, and took him back in where he continued. It was painful, right? So I had told myself, I'd rather go through what I'm going through than to go back home. Mm.
Whoa. That is powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. The pain of being in that house.
Would have been worse.
Yeah.
Than having to be struggling, you know, going back and forth and, you know, being on the outside. But to go back in that environment, it would have just doomed you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so now, so let me take you where in my mind at that time, what I was thinking and feeling. I was disappointed in Aretha. Mm. Aretha was shamed. Aretha was also embarrassed. Aretha felt unworthy. Aretha felt that God was punishing her. Aretha felt that God hadn't forgiven her. Aretha felt that she didn't have a life. She would never have a life, because this is what I was told. Once you have a child, that's it. Your life is over. But I had made up in my mind that I did not want to be in an environment that could not teach me or help me to grow.
Absolutely.
At that age, that's what entered my mind. So when I started meeting girls who were in the same situation as me, I pulled away from them, because my mentality was, you can't help me.
Mm.
What can you do for me?
They were broken. How can a broken person help another broken person?
Need help.
Yeah.
I can't help you. So what we going to do, sit down here together and talk about our situation and feel sorry for ourselves and for each other? No, I wasn't going to do that. And I could have done that, but I chose not to. I could have landed up in prostitution, because that was introduced to me. Mm-hmm. But that thing in me, that faith that I carried inside of me, said, no, you can't do this.
Now,
so
pause,
go ahead.
Again, because, mm-hmm. You know, these are trigger words that I think is so important to elaborate mm-hmm. on for the listeners. You said you were introduced. It was mm-hmm. Asked of you. There was a proposal mm-hmm. of this.
Yep.
Hey, you want to do this thing?
Right.
Now, without maybe calling any names, I mean, who in the world? Was it someone you knew, someone you were aware of, someone in the community who asked you that?
Someone that I met who was in the same situation as I. And she felt there was,
oh, it was
nothing
a woman.
Else she could do. Yeah. Young girls my
Lord,
age. Yeah. That were
okay.
They were hustling. They were doing that.
Yes.
You know, so they were getting their monies on. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
They were eating. They were shopping. I was like, nah, I can't do that. That's not me.
Wow.
That's not me. I can't do that. And I pulled away.
Yes.
I pulled away from that. You see that family that I was living with? That family, I would never forget them. They helped me and my daughter. I was so broken, and my self-esteem was so low at the time, that God placed me around them and in their home to build me up. He used them to build me up, because I saw how they were with themselves. They were vain. Mm. They were conceited people. They used to stand in front of the mirror and throw kisses at themselves. Okay. I had never seen that before in my life.
I love that.
Do you hear what I'm saying? Yes. Even one of the girls that were there, the older sister, her and I became very close. Very close. She was my best friend, and she took so good care of my daughter to the point where she would hug me and kiss me and say, "I love you, Aretha." And that was weird for me.
Wow.
It felt the way I was like what? Yeah, very what uncomfortable. I was like, I used to be like shying away from it because I never yes. had that. I didn't know what that was like. Wow. But she taught me that it was okay to have a friend that way, mm-hmm. to love in that way, to be affectionate that way. I never had that in me. And I didn't have it in me to teach my daughter that she was beautiful. To tell her she was beautiful. But they did it. They used to tell my daughter at 2 and 3 and 4 years old, "You're beautiful. You're sexy." And I would be like, "Stop telling her she's sexy."
Because you thought that was something that was just like something so out of this world.
Yeah.
When you were hearing that, you were like, "Wait, is this normal?"
Exactly. Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
And wow. I remember the sister, one of the sisters saying, "No, I'm not going to stop telling her she's sexy. She needs to know. She needs to believe it. Carissa, that's my daughter's name. Look in the mirror and say, 'I'm sexy and I'm beautiful.'" And that's what my daughter used to do.
But you know what, Aretha? Let me just say this. Even though you didn't experience having, you know, someone affirm you and saying, you know, "Oh, Aretha, you know, you're beautiful. You're this. I love you." Mm-hmm. For some reason, you deep down, I believe you loved yourself, because when you mm-hmm. were faced with that proposal from that madame, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You could have easily said, "Oh, yes." But for some reason you said, "No, I cannot do that." There had to be something more.
Yeah.
In a dignity, even if it was this, a small little piece of dignity. Mm-hmm. You had that. Mm-hmm. You knew. You were smart enough to know, "No, I can't belittle mm-hmm. myself. I love myself too much." Even if mm-hmm. you didn't realize it then, but for some mm-hmm. reason in the back of your head, your spirit, you knew that, "No, I'm better than this." You know, mm-hmm. no one said "I love you" to you. You experience all that physical, you know, mm-hmm. sexual abuse, you know, mm-hmm. Verbal abuse. But when that mm-hmm. proposal came your way, mm-hmm. I mean, how old were you when that happened? How do you remember the age?
I was maybe 17.
Okay.
18. 17. About 18, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. knew that this is not for you. You had a self-worth, even if it was this mm-hmm. small. So kudos mm-hmm. to you for that. Kudos mm-hmm. to you for that. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's powerful. Yeah. Now, you went through all of that. And that family showed you a different kind of union, a family right. connection. And right. even though it was unfamiliar with you, you started mm-hmm. to learn, right?
Yeah.
You started to see, okay, this is something different. And maybe right. this is normal, you know? Mm-hmm. My environment in the past, the way I grew up, that might have been the norm, but that's not mm-hmm. the right way. Right.
Right.
So right. now you've entered into a safe space. Did mm-hmm. that allow you now to navigate into redefining who you are and that purpose? Because we're going to get to how you created something special, you know, and I want to get to the point where you made that decision to create something special. Because it takes a lot of fortitude. It takes drive. Every day someone said, "Oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this mm-hmm. and I want this and this is my vision and this is my goal." But mm-hmm. there's something that's preventing them, you know, could be various reasons. But I want to get to that point when now you navigated into the safe space, this wonderful family. Mm-hmm. You are now in a positive environment, and mm-hmm. get to when you made that decision. Let's get to that and talk about how you made that decision to create something special. So you could continue. Yeah.
I was 20 years old. I was staying with my brother and his wife. I was at the kitchen sink washing the dishes. And for the very, very first time, I heard the voice of God. I heard someone say, go home. And it shook me till I dropped the dish and I started looking around. And I'm like, I'm the only one in the apartment. Who said that? So I just like paused for a couple of seconds, started doing the dishes again. And I heard stronger, go home. That's when I knew. And I said, I'm not going home. I'm not going back to that place. I'm not. You have to force me to go back home. I'm not going back home. I can't go back home to that. I can't do it. I can't survive that. And when I use the word force, that's exactly what happened, because shortly after, my sister-in-law comes back. She comes to me and she says, Aretha, the lease is up. I'm not renewing it. I'm moving to Florida. Boom. There was my force. So now I had to go back home. Call up my mom, said, Mom, can I come back? So now I had to humble myself. That pride was being stripped away. A lot of the times the decisions that we make is pride, right? So, or the decision that we don't make comes from pride. So I go back home and I sit on the bed and I'm crying. And I said, God, keep me here for only 2 years. Just 2 years. That's all I need.
Yes.
And within that 2 years, I found a job working at a hotel as a operator. So I would be the first voice you would hear when you call.
Okay.
And
and you have a lovely phone voice.
Oh, thank you. I had benefits.
Yep.
I was getting paid every week. I saved my money.
Yes.
And within 2 years, I moved out. When I moved out and got into my own apartment, just me and my daughter.
Wow.
That felt like freedom.
My God.
I felt free, free of all that stuff, that excess stuff, worrying about where we were going to sleep the next day, who we were going to sleep at, what we were going to eat, how we were going to eat, just and hearing noise all around, because my mom was always with her mouth. And so just being in my own place, my own environment, that I can now create my own environment, what I want it to be like, what I want it to feel like. Now, I was responsible. I had the power to do this. And that's what I did.
Yes.
So now I started to create and build a relationship between me and my daughter. Because I was not the mother to her in the first 5 years that I should have been.
Right.
Now I had to create that. Build that love on her, have conversations with her, get to know my daughter, because I did not know my daughter. Someone else knew her. My best friend at the time, the family that I was living with, she took care of my daughter. She used to take her to the park. She used to take her out. She used to buy things for her. She used to take her shopping, not me, because Aretha was not connected there yet. I wasn't there yet. I wasn't ready to be a mom.
Right.
Right. So now
you're starting.
I had to get into that. Yes. Yeah. I'm starting to be a mother.
Yes.
And I started to embrace it. I started to know my daughter and what I wanted for her and for my life. And I said, that's not what I wanted. I didn't want that. What does Aretha want for herself and for her daughter?
So you started to now.
I was still searching.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Doing some self-evaluation, self-searching and thinking and asking questions, asking myself and asking God. Right. But the thing with that was I did not have to go searching for it. It came to me.
Wow.
It found me.
Now, hold on. It found you. Didn't have to go searching for it, even though you were doing a self-searching for you individually as Aretha. Do you think that by doing the self-searching and asking yourself these questions and maybe you had a strategy? Do you think because of that, then it came to you? It just not manifested probably, but because of you you are at a place where now you are in a calm environment now. You're mm-hmm. knowing who Aretha mm-hmm. Taylor is. By asking mm-hmm. those self-reflection questions, mm-hmm. everything just mm-hmm. gravitates towards you. Because now you're peeling the layers. You're healing slowly.
Right. Yeah. Very slowly. Because I still had a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. Right? From my past. I was also abusive. I was in an abusive relationship, but I was the abuser. Okay. Right. So that came from what I inherited from my mom. Mm. That came from learning. I learned that, right? That was learned behavior. Mm-hmm. And also the anger that was there from my mom, from all those years of being hurt and being called all these names. So I took that out on the guy that I was with, right? So for years, I kept meeting women and young women, girls, who reminded me of my past, reminded me of my life, had mothers like my mom.
Yes.
Right? And I'm thinking, what in the hell is going on? Why do I keep meeting these type of people?
Oh my God, what am I attracted to?
Right? I'm like, I don't want it, because now it's bringing back memories that I don't want to remember. I don't want to deal with, right? But it just keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. And I remember at the late 20s, one of my daughter's friends ran away from home and came to our home. So she's sitting there, she's telling me what's going on at home, and I'm calling her mom to let her mom know, your daughter's with me, she's safe. She's going through some stuff. Let her spend the night. Let me have a conversation with her.
Right.
Let's, and see where this goes. Now, let her come back tomorrow. She's like, okay, that's fine. No problem. And that's what happened. Sit up all night, me and my daughter talking with her. And we're eating and just watching TV. And I'm picking her brain and made her comfortable.
Right.
Following day, she goes home to her mom, and her mom and I are having a conversation, and we're talking. She's like, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Long while after, another friend runs away, come to my house.
Oh, my goodness.
What in the hell is really going on? It was still hasn't hit me. It hit me.
Wow.
When I started going to church, that's when it hit me in my early 30s. This is what I should be doing.
Yes.
This is what I am going to be doing. This is what I was called to do. This is what I was created to do. This is what I was born to do.
And your most recent post on your mm-hmm. on your page, mm-hmm. There was a sentence that says, when something is for you, it will mm-hmm. bring clarity and mm-hmm. alignment to your life, not chaos and confusion. When something is for you, it will bring clarity and alignment to your life. Now, when you figure out, well, you know what, this is probably what I need to do. You know, I need to share my experiences. Yeah. This was for you to share.
Right.
This was part of your journey and process to continued healing. And also in the process of that, help others.
Exactly.
It created clarity for that moment.
Yeah.
And you are aligned with your purpose mm-hmm. based on those experiences that you had.
Mm-hmm.
So when they started, you met these women or young mm-hmm. girls who
young
were
girls.
Just broken mm-hmm. and lost. They didn't have the clarity. They were confused. When they started going at you, you started attracting them rather.
Right.
What did you do?
I gave them my time. Mm-hmm. I gave them my heart. I gave them my ear. I gave them a bed to sleep in. I gave them a place, a safe haven place. I invited them into my home and into my heart. I listened to them. I cared for them. I advised them. And even some of the advice that I gave to them didn't make sense. But when they did it, it started making sense. Things started falling into place.
Wow. Wow.
And I gave them counseling and advice from my personal experience, right? Because I went through what they went through. So I can relate. When you can relate to someone, right? And if someone comes to you and say, well, Allison, I've been going through so and so and so, and you don't know what that's like. Mm-hmm. You really can't speak to them from a true place, yeah. Authentic, discerning place. You really can't. You cannot relate. I don't understand what this woman is going through because I've never been there. I don't know what that feels like. I don't know what that hurt is like. So I can't really relate, sincerely relate to her or right. to him. Right. So these women and young girls that I was meeting, their experiences and their stories were too much like mine. So that kept blowing my mind. And again, it wasn't until I hit my 30s. That's when I understood what this was all about. So now I knew, all right, Aretha, this is what you're going to be doing. But how are you going to do this? Mm-hmm. What direction are you going to go into? When will this take place? So I was now being what you call like in a learning process, in a learning stage, in a training stage. The training stage is of me being prepared for where I am now.
Yes. And where you are now mm-hmm. is at a place where now you're at a solid place mm-hmm. where you continue. Mm-hmm. The council, you continue to offer your counseling services mm-hmm. for women who may be going through similar things that mm-hmm. you had in the mm-hmm. past, and also perhaps a little bit more. So now we're going to go into part two, because this is where when we talk about, I wouldn't say success, mm-hmm. you know, you went to trials and tribulations, and from that you birthed something that is meaningful, and that's create right. and change. And I think that's so impactful, you know. So how did you get to the point where you created this organization, and could you introduce this wonderful organization to the listeners here?
Sure. The name of the organization is New Beginnings Outreach Program for Women. That's the organization. It was created through my learning and through my understanding of what my transition was like or what it meant to me. It was founded right after Hurricane Sandy. I had lost that's right. everything. Lost everything. I had just lost my job too. I was laid off a few months before then. And then I founded the organization. So I literally started everything all over again, right? And the name of the foundation is New Beginnings. So here I was walking into a new beginning, yeah. right? And I built this organization from my heart, from the pain, from the hurt. What can I give these women that I didn't have and that I wanted and needed and did not have access to? How can I be to these women that no one was to me? Yeah. How can I be a community for them? Because I didn't have a community. I felt alone. I felt a loss, rejected, abandoned, misunderstood. I was frustrated. So how can I help them? What is the need of them? So this is how I had to pour in and pour out and gather information and resources and speak to these women. What is your need? So because I can't help you if I don't know what your need is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So in speaking with individuals, women and young girls, to finding out What is your need? Those women coming home from incarceration. I have never been incarcerated, but I have incarceration in my family. My own daughter was incarcerated, right? And I know when she came home to a community.
Right.
And that is very important. How can we, what are the resources that we can put together to help these women coming home from incarceration? So this organization was built from my heart, my hurt, my anger, my frustration, my pain. It was built from that because of the hurt and the pain. I know how to, I know the resources that these women will need.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. How did you go about locating these women, these young girls? Was it obviously hence outreach, but what were the some of the steps, you know, in the beginning of creating
flyers?
Okay.
I created a bunch of flyers and just started passing them out in the beginning. Just started passing them out, going knocking on doors, other organizations, other agencies, letting them know what I'm doing, who I am. And all, a lot of the doors, and most of them I knocked on, They didn't open. It was maybe 2 years later, I went back knocking on the same doors again, and this time they opened up. But it was, again, I didn't have to go out looking for the women. I attracted them. Mm. That never stopped. I met women everywhere I went, standing on the platform, waiting on the train, at the bus stop, at weddings, in public bathrooms, at events. I would nonstop stop, just always meeting women. Up until this day, I'm always meeting women, just sitting down and having a conversation. Sometimes I'm in the bathroom and a woman walks in and she starts talking. That happened to me already. The woman is talking to me and she's telling me she has cancer and yada, 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 yada. I'm in Walmart and this woman comes up to me to ask me to help her to find something. She starts telling me her whole life. She just got out of prison. She was on drugs, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sitting in a restaurant. Someone comes in the restaurant, sits next to me, talking. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to be bothered. I just want to be alone. It was a constant attraction. I never had to go out looking for these women. I would meet them. They would come to me.
You just have that, what is it? You have that look, you have that empathetic gesture. I mean, what is it, huh? What is it that they just come to you like that, right? You have that, I would say you have that anointing, you know? And
I was just going to say
yes. You're a very personable person.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're not intimidated to say hi to someone. And just by simply probably even though just a look, and mm-hmm. some, you're very open. You're not a threat, you know, so you're approachable, and just a simple hi or a simple look that will get someone to come on over and say, oh, hi, or you'll say, hi, mm-hmm. how are you? And then boom, there goes the conversation. And you're like, well, what do you do? Well, what do you do? You know? And that's where showing up as you are, not afraid to open your mouth to and say, hey, this is what I do. And right. also you're a compassionate person. From my experience, you're not afraid to ask, hey, how are you? Or, you know, how are you really? You know, mm-hmm. how are you really? Because that, how are you? I remember one time I used to all the time say, how are you? Mm-hmm. And for years I kind of stopped saying, how are you? I'm like, hey, how you feeling? How are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And my dad taught me that. Years ago, he would say, all this, how are you? How are you? Everybody, how are you? How are you? And then they're not really, they want to really listen. So,
yes, people really don't care. They don't care how you're doing.
They don't care how you're doing.
It's just something to say, how you doing? You know, you really don't want to know how the person is doing.
Don't ask me how I'm doing if you really don't want to know how I'm doing. But you know right. what? And then you say, you know what? I'm going to say, how are you feeling? Because mm-hmm. then I could get an answer. Oh, I'm feeling like crap today. Or, oh, mm-hmm. you know, I'm feeling. And then that could start, you know, an icebreaker and start a conversation. And,
right.
you know, that would be more of a better question. But I think You're just anointed. And one of the questions I also want to ask before we wrap up, because I think we're going to do a part two on this, honestly. Mm-hmm. How important is your faith and spirituality? How is that important for you to help ground you while you're in this space in the with the program?
It's everything to me. My faith, my relationship with Christ, it's everything for me and to me. I will not be where I am today if it were not for that. Because that's what I hold on to. That's what I know. That's what I believe in. This is what I was taught. Growing up, when I experienced that, right, in the church, right? Even when the church turned away from me, I never turned away from God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I always carried him with me. I always remembered him. I always spoke with him. I always cried out to him. Always. So in doing what I'm doing, because I know it's Christ-centered, right? He called me to do this. And because I know that I am walking in my purpose and I have made the right decision. For me, this is the only decision to make.
Wow. Whoa.
The only decision. And also, Allison, I didn't point out that we can continue in our next podcast. My mom was bipolar. We didn't know this until shortly before she died.
Oh, so we grew up
with a mother who was bipolar all of our lives.
Oh my gosh, that's another podcast, number two.
Yes.
Because a lot of times we don't see the sign there, maybe misdiagnosis. Oh yeah, that's a whole different podcast.
Allison, we didn't know what that was growing up. We didn't bipolar. We never heard of bipolar. We never knew the schizophrenia, dementia. No. What is that? We don't know Alzheimer's. We didn't know.
Especially culturally.
Please. Give me a break.
Culturally? It's not even this person mad.
Exactly. Up until today. Ooh. They don't know what that is.
Ooh. Yeah. I see five different podcasts. I see part two, three, four, and five.
It's a series, right?
I see that. But you know, Aretha, to wrap up the first episode 10, Where is New Beginnings Outreach Program today, in terms of what is happening? What can we expect? What are you currently doing? And, in a few words, just let us know.
Expanding.
Okay.
Expanding, growing, marketing, advertising, and seeking resources. Absolutely. Because there's so much work to be done. We haven't even begun yet, to be quite honest with you.
Right.
We haven't begun. But that's where we're at right now. Working toward how are we going to meet the needs of these women on a greater level, on a greater scale. We want to be different from every other organization out there, right? And we are different.
Okay.
Because we're not about money. We're not about fame. We're not about glory. We're about making an impact. And an impact is an ongoing thing.
Yes, absolutely. It is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So just to recap, the needs right now, mm-hmm. you are marketing, right? Mm-hmm. You are in need of certain resources.
Yes, and finances.
And finances. Mm-hmm. And I guess we can, in the next podcast, we can try to find out in terms of how you, the listeners out there, how you can help support this outreach program, and how can people get connected to you, Aretha? Is there an email? Is there a website?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So my email is N as in Nancy, B as in boy, the word outreachpro@gmail.com. That's NB outreachpro@gmail.com.
Wonderful. And if you guys are listening and you follow me on not just the Happy Black Daughter podcast, but on my website, which is alisonbram.com, there will also be a link and the link to the email on my blog, and as well as I'm going to link the podcast onto the blog where you can connect with Aretha, and also maybe her Facebook page as well. You can reach out to her. I'll link that as well. But I just want to say I loved this conversation. I love this.
So did I.
My ears.
Thank you so much.
Glued to every word you were saying when you were speaking, when you were sharing that story. I visualize everything that you were going through. I visualize you when you were 15. I visualized you when that madame asked you that question, you know, and it was very impactful for me just to listen. And I'm grateful for you. And I thank you for being who you are.
Here.
Yeah. You know,
same here.
And I can't wait for others to hear the story. And I can't wait for part two, which we are going to schedule soon, because there are other. We're going to talk about more in terms of the finances and resources about the organization, but also as an entrepreneur, the struggles in that. We're going to talk about father-daughter relationship. We're just going to talk about more different topics that I know our listeners can relate to. All right. So I thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Any final words?
No, not right now.
No final words from Aretha. Okay.
Can you imagine?
I'm shocked. She said everything, ladies. Okay. And gents. Well, thank you so much. And I'll see you in the next vlog. All right.
Next podcast. All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Happy Black Daughter podcast. And this is episode 10. This is Allison Ram signing out. Have a wonderful day, evening, or night, wherever you are. Have a great day. Bye-bye.